Hi, hello. We have a fun episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. First, we have a full weekend of Las Vegas Summer League action, so we react. We got to see Caleb Wilson, Allen Graves, Braden Berries, and a few others. We give our takeaways. We then check out the latest news and updates around the NBA. Do we have a LeBron team? What is the best LeBron fit? We bounce around. We shift to the W side. The Los Angeles Sparks firing their general manager. Are big changes coming? Can they turn things around this year? We check in with the New York Liberty and more. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, good morning. How are you?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias, it's time to once again hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up. And what has to be a dunker first, I am recording from home and you are recording from Vegas. I feel like that's normally flipped when I am like in town for Aces things and whatnot. So this is going to be an experience. I'm excited about this one. But more Summer League action over the weekend, bro, naturally.
Bro, doxed me 5 seconds in.
Wow, we know what time of the year it is. Come on. They don't know where you stand, big dog. We can scrub it if we need to. In all seriousness, more Summer League. We got the first weekend of Vegas Summer League action, so we got plenty of debuts on the table. Of most note, I would say, among the top five, Caleb Wilson made his Summer League debut. We talked about him a little bit heading into Friday's episode, but that was going to be a matchup that happened by the time the pod dropped, so we didn't talk about him in depth. We now have some Caleb Wilson Vegas film on deck. Against the Memphis Grizzlies, battle with Cam Boozer, 35 points, including a 7 of 11 clip from three, with a lot of those coming off the bounce. And if you watched him in North Carolina, he didn't take a lot of threes, much less make a lot of threes. And so for him to have the opening that he did, and to make as many as he did, was eye-popping, in addition to everything else. And then last night, 19 points, 8 rebounds, 2 steals, 5 blocks against Utah. There was no Darren Peterson in this one, so you didn't get that top 5 matchup. But didn't shoot well, still played well, still filled the stat sheet. So, Steve, for you, what are some of your early impressions of Caleb Wilson's Chicago Bull?
I mean, continue the excitement of having this top-heavy and deep of a draft class where we have players who can excel and help their teams right off the gate. You know, we talked about A.J. Dabanza and Darren Peterson, Cam Boozer, and then Caleb Wilson comes. It's like, hey, I can also do this. And I think the most interesting part is everyone kind of knew what the top four was going to be, and it was kind of easy to slot Caleb Wilson to the Bulls and be like, okay, he's got the athleticism, he's got the size, we know what he can bring to the table. And then self-creation in threes comes to the table and drives. Yes. And it's like, well, if we're going to put that on top of the package, it gets interesting. My brain, as I was watching that first game against the Grizzlies, went to like Kawhi Leonard, where it's just like, okay, you are this. You are now going to become that. And so I'm not saying Caleb will exactly go apples to apples to Kawhi, but in college, you did this because you were asked to do this. There's more that you can do, and you are now doing that. What does that mean for your career, your trajectory? What does it mean for the team? So I was just like, okay. If this is going to be the case, doesn't mean it have to be a perfect world. Doesn't mean you have to do this every single night. But the fact that I know you can, I know you're willing to, you can get to your spots, that's where the fun begins. So that's where I tip the cap to Caleb Wilson for coming out the gates and just letting everyone know that, hey, there's more in the bag than you thought.
Yeah, like I think the variety of the shot making surprised me. Because I think, again, not a draft Nick, but you see him in transition. It's like, oh, this dude can fly around. You can toss some lobs. He can self-create there. He can drive, put a shoulder into your chest. Really good finisher, et cetera. You see some of the turnarounds late in clock. It's like, okay, there's some scoring potential here. I think the defense and general athleticism is going to be the calling card very early on. For him to come out the gate with, I will knock down spot-up threes. I will knock down pull-up threes. I will dribble 5 or 6 times and then get into side steps or step backs. And it's like, oh, well, this is a level of comfort that I didn't anticipate. Forget the numbers themselves for a minute, because you take 7 of 11 for 3 anytime you can. None of those shot attempts that he took looked like he was taking it for the first time. And I think he had a quote about it. Like, yeah, I could shoot in college. That just wasn't my role. To your point, Steve, like, this is what I was asked to do. Now I can kind of explore a little bit. And so now, just from a form perspective, like, he can get to more shots than I anticipated. If he can do that, you also have occasional usage as a screener. You have the transition stuff on top of that. there's just an offensive toolkit that he can build on. And once he gets to play with his NBA teammates, and we know how much the Bulls actually just want to run, it should be a little bit more free-flowing for him. Like, the context should be, it's hard to say easier because you're going from summer league talent to NBA talent. There are naturally going to be growing pains to that. But comparatively, it should be a slightly easier context. He shouldn't be asked to self-create as much as he was during summer league. And thus, some of this stuff might be able to pop more. And so him having this kind of foundation offensively really excites me. Go ahead.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how the Bulls build this out, how Thiago Splitter wants to do this, technically, with everyone around. I think there's a give and take with that statement you said. Will the burden be on him to completely self-create? No. His ability to get to his bucket, maybe at the start of the clock, maybe in transition, maybe at the end of a clock, I think that's important if the Bulls bog down. So I think there is like a balancing act there to where, okay, if you can do this, can you grow on that? It's going to take some growing pains, but I think the confidence and the moxie exists. So I'm intrigued to see how that grows and how Chicago just kind of tries to build the boat, because I think the context, there are bucket getters in that room and there's pace. So I'm intrigued.
No, I'm right there. No, I think that is more than fair. And I think other thing I would add before I shift to the defensive side of the ball with him, because I want to get your thoughts on his defense.
Do you want to get my thoughts on his defense, or do you want to give your thoughts on his defense?
No, I want to get your thoughts on his defense, because I have not heard or seen your thoughts on his defense yet. You cannot trick me. But
anyway. What if I don't have any? Now what?
Well, I guess we'll just have to wait, then, won't we? But in all seriousness, I wanted to add, like, I feel like collectively we can kind of sprinkle in this player's a dog, this player's super competitive, and it can become a little bit oversaturated in some cases. No, Caleb Wilson is just kind of like that. When you listen to him talk, pregame, postgame, whatever, like, he just has a mindset that I generally enjoy. And as someone that was, like, in the building for the matchup against the Grizzlies and got a nice media seat, which, brief aside, it really is just kind of the Hunger Games trying to get seats on the media side during summer league. It get kind of hazy. But either way, being able to sit kind of baseline at the media section and getting to, like, literally hear him talk, and seeing some of the mannerisms after baskets and things, it's like, oh, yes. Whatever, it may be irrational on my part, but it's like, nah, whatever his ceiling is, I feel better about him reaching it just because of how he approaches basketball. He drops 35 in the debut, and he's like, we lost. Like, what does this mean? I could have played better. And it's like, sure, in a literal sense, there were things you can clean up because no player plays a perfect basketball game. But if this is where you're at, after your first one, and you just took a major question mark, if not completely off the table, you at least moved it to the edge of it with the shooting. Your first thought is, I lost, I could have been better. Like, I just love that kind of competitiveness, that kind of straight-mindedness. So, like, I just want to give him the salute on that front.
So with the dog mentality, does that bleed into the defense, or is this overall competitor? Caleb Wilson. Also, very quickly, before we get to that, was that a stunt and also a complaint that you dropped?
No, it's not. I think for me, as you've known me for quite a while, like, I'm not a pushy person, you know what I mean? And so if me and someone else get somewhere at the same time, I'm more likely to be like, actually, you got it. I'll figure something out. You know, this is why I don't like scrums on the media side, because I don't like talking over people. Like, that's just my personality. So when you get to a summer league setup, to where there's a whole lot of shuffling in between games. Can you get a seat? Can you not? For me, it's just like, ooh, can I nail this in a way that I'm not going to be like second guessing, was I rude to this person when I like jogged over to the table type beat? So that's all that was. But to the defense for Caleb Wilson, incredibly loud stock numbers through his first few games in summer league, 2 steals per game, 4 blocks per game, Steve. And I guess I'll also add, just for the general activity point, 3 offensive rebounds per game throughout summer league so far. Very active on the offensive glass. So it's good that not only were the self-creation flashes there, he can just do the dirty work and create extra opportunities for himself and for his team. So I want to sprinkle that in. But 6 stocks per game through his first summer league game, Steve. What did you like about the defense? What were some things that kind of stood out to you on that end?
Yeah, I just go more philosophy-wise. When you have that kind of size and that kind of talent, how does that translate? That's where my mind goes. I'm trying to see, okay, what's your activity level like when the ball's pushed in transition? What's your activity level like on the weak side? Are you communicating? Are you pointing? Are you able to switch? Are you able to kind of be in situations where you can recover? And so I felt like Caleb Wilson checked some good boxes. It's summer league, so you're going to have errors. You're going to have breakdowns. You're like, there's not as much time that's been put into the defensive end. Like, some teams will hammer it, but you only have so much time. So I don't necessarily grade with a pen. I have a pencil. I kind of take notes. And so I've liked just the overall flow as far as Caleb Wilson being able to say, okay, I'm here. I can take a switch. I can understand what I'm supposed to do on the weak side, and I can communicate, and I have the activity on ball at times. So is it a perfect world? No. But like I don't necessarily grade as harshly with summer league defense because I know how hard it is to sustain summer league defense. It's an abstract more than a concept. So I have liked what I've seen so far as the little things. I'd rather dive into our little things that you are thinking about than, okay, you're switching and stopping everything. Like I'll use Kingston Flemons for an example, right? His switchability was probably one of my favorite things that he did in summer league. Not necessarily that he got stops, but his desire to switch everyone on dribble handoffs, pick and roll, I was like, okay, I like that. And then if I need to pass them off, I pass them off. That's a good skill to have. So those are kind of the little things I'm looking for defensively in summer league. What do you think about his defense?
Okay. Like, I found myself, like, massively impressed. This is a young guy. As you mentioned, there are just going to be lapses. There's a little bit of, we switch, pass off the matchup. I kind of relax a little bit because I've done my job. Like, that is just going to happen with young players. But I liked a lot of it. I think, for me, the stock numbers are what they are. 2 steals, 4 blocks is insane. The hand-eye coordination that he possesses and, like, the angles that he was able to get some of these blocks in particular and some of these recoveries, I'm just like, I'm going to really enjoy watching him in Chicago this year if they stick with, we want our bigs at the level. Like, it's easy to kind of map out him flying around on the weak side and just kind of erasing stuff and then jump starting transition opportunities. I don't know how he got some of the blocks that he did, where he's like turned and angled in a different way. He's like getting it with his offhand. And I was like, this is not what it's supposed to look like this early. So for me, baseline, I'm just super impressed with his ability to chase things down. You already mentioned the communication piece, his ability to move around there. I am curious to see like who he guards, what he's going to look like against like your bulkier forwards. Like a quick example, if we get like Bull Spurs, for example, what does he look like against Tobias Harris when they match up? Not that Tobias is like a world beater, but because he is like a powerful guy, can get you in the mid post, can move you with his shoulders. Caleb's still around and got the frame. Like, what is the balance going to be like between like him holding his ground and still being able to contest or maybe block shots? Like, that's a quick example, but that's something I'm going to be monitoring as we shift to preseason action, regular season action, et cetera. What do the on-ball reps look like? Because I think from a positioning standpoint, he should be fine. He obviously has, again, the lift and the athleticism. How well will he hold up? What will the screen navigation, more so off the ball than on the ball, look like for him? But overall, very impressed. Like, I think he has the makings of a really, really good defender. At bare minimum, he's going to be a super fun one for me.
It's going to take time. I mean, I think this is a scenario where, even when he contains drives, he's going to have to find a way to keep his hands out of the cookie jar and avoid foul trouble. Like, are you going to be in early? Or are you recovering and be using your athleticism to make a play? It's like, so it's just young rookie stuff.
Yeah.
I'm glad you had Caleb Wilson. I'm glad you had Caleb Wilson. I can speak, edit all that. I'm glad you had Caleb Wilson defensive thoughts. There we go.
Of course. We got there. We landed the plane. Actually, you mentioned something that I wanted to hit on, just more of a general summer league question. I think we touched on it a little bit on Friday. I didn't actually like ask you about it. We have seen an uptick in full court pressure in summer league. We've seen a little bit more two on the ball in summer league. Is this just basic install for summer league things? It does feel a little bit more aggressive than anticipated. I think we've talked about it before. Like, you're obviously not getting a full defensive or an offensive game plan in this short amount of time. It's just interesting to me that it has trended more aggressive, it seems like, this year than last year in terms of the basic installs. Is that something that's caught your eye during summer league play so far?
Are you sticking with the full court pressure gimmick? Is this leading to a graphic? Is this a bit that you're doing? What do you mean? Has that popped in my eye? What is this?
I do indeed have a graphic because it has felt that way for me. And so it's been interesting to see there has been a slight uptick in how often you get two on the ball and pick and roll.
0.8%?
Yeah. we got the numbers, baby. So our second special. But no, in all seriousness, like, it has felt like a little bit of an uptick. I'm just like, is this going to be more of a trend? Because as we go back to last regular season and the year before, like, we have seen teams kind of trend in that direction. So I'm just like, within the basic install context of summer league, it is fascinating to me that more teams are like, okay, this is what we are starting with, and maybe ramping things down. So like that was fascinating to me. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, Steve.
Hold on. Before you get to your second thing, let's stick there. Okay. There's no way we're going with the unfortunate event trend of full court pressure again. We already did this last year. Yeah, I'm not letting you get this off a second time. Now, what I'll say
it's
is...
It's interesting.
It's you said that last year. Don't. I've done this before. What I would say is when it comes to summer league, it's easier to ask your guys to pressure the ball full court than it is to just kind of sit back. So you might have one person who's just going to do that. And so I don't necessarily think it's a team thing. It's a time for experimentation, but there's only so much you can experiment with. You only have so many days to practice, and you just kind of have to figure it out. So it's not like if you're a drop team, you're a drop team. If you get hit by a guard, you might say, hey, we're trapping, and here's our rotations. You might put a couple things in, but there's not much wiggle room to kind of knock on doors. So I cannot believe we're doing the – I cannot believe I'm seeing – blitz rate in summer league. I cannot believe I'm hearing full court pressure chin for a second year. A second year.
Hey, you know who you do the podcast with. Come on. Come on.
That's not how that works. No, do something else.
Well, that's a great segue, Steve, because the league has decided to do something else with free throws during summer league this year, picking up from what G League has been doing for the last couple of years. One free throw, 2 points. One free throw, 3 points. Do you like the free throw shift in summer league? How have you felt that it's affected kind of pace of play and things like that? Don't like it.
I don't like it. I mean, I know it speeds things up, but earn your free throws. Shoot your free throws. Mm. Free throws are free throws. Like, I don't think we have to. That's not where the focus has to go. If we're speeding the game up, I don't. Okay, cool. Y'all gonna get so mad if they put this in, and now y'all in the bonus. I just do get to the line. I take one specific shot to get 2 points. No, we don't need to do this. I'm good.
Okay. Well, this is why I wanted to ask. We hadn't talked about it yet.
What are your thoughts? Do you like the 1-for-2, the 1-for-3?
I am generally fine with it. I will say, like, talking with some people in Vegas, one of the points that was brought up is there's already a lot of strain on the bodies with how fast the league is now, how spaced out the league is now. And now that you're going from like 3 free throws to 1 or 2 free throws to 1, you don't have the same like time to catch a breather during free throws as you would since they shift to 1. I think that is something that I didn't consider. I was like, you know what? That's probably fair. And I wonder like what the cumulative effect of something like that would be if it does hit the NBA in particular. But from like a pace of play standpoint, like I kind of like it. It's like, let's keep things moving. Like the summer league games are already shorter. You go from 12 minutes to 10. You didn't sprinkle that in. Okay, that makes sense. But I do think holistically, like, what does that mean for in-game recovery? What does that mean for just overall strain? How could that impact injuries moving forward? Like, that's something that I want to spend a little bit more time on before I, like, give the Nakia stamp of let's do this, let's bring it to the NBA.
So I asked you what you think, and you told me what someone thinks, and you don't know. All right, what's the next topic?
No, I gave you what I thought. I was like, hey, there's something else that I need to think more about. That's all. But I want to bounce around a little bit, Steve. Any other players? We start with Caleb Wilson. Some other guys that may have caught your eye over the weekend.
Do you have any other trends? Is there anything else from the graphic you want to break down, Nikias? Let's stay there.
Nothing from the graphic. I will say, Steve, for you, zone rate much lower this year compared to last year. Not many old coaches being.
Didn't have time to put zone in. Sorry.
Hey, I'm just
we're trying to cook.
I'm just saying.
All right. Where are you at with Braden Burries? Because he's taken the Milwaukee Bucks fandom by storm, which, and I'll get this out the way before I throw it to you, and this is why I framed it this way. When I saw one of his buckets and I saw the right-left step back, I thought of a guard that also played for the Milwaukee Bucks last year, and I chuckled to myself internally. So where are you at with Braden Burries?
Oh, my. Well, like this weekend was going to be my official introduction to Braden Burries. And let me tell you, I am intrigued by the space creation, first and foremost. As you talked about, you know, the step back already. He generates so much room on his. He does a really good job of like feeling out a defender's body. Like, you were trying to be physical with me. I'm going to use that aggressiveness against you, knock you off your spot. And now I have room to get to a floater, to get to a full-blown step back, especially from behind the arc. So like the space creation is the first thing that popped for me. And then from there, he does have some downhill juice to him. Not the burstiest guy, but he will take you with him on some of these drives. Now, I will say, got blocked at the rim a little bit more than I would have liked for a guard, but like the fact that he can still generate this amount of point paint touches is interesting to me. And then just kind of putting in the notes what I want to monitor moving forward is just like, what are the short range counters? Because like obviously in the mid range, get to your pull up, whatever. But like when you get past the free throw line, are you getting to floaters? Are these some like shoulder bump into push shot, shoulder bump into turnaround jumper? Like what counters is he going to develop? Because again, drive perspective, you're on my hip. I don't really care. I can still navigate. I have a good enough handle to get two spots. So like that is a positive to me. You know, the shooting is what it is. The scoring has been what it has been so far. The fact that he's had this amount of on-ball responsibility, and he just really hasn't turned the ball over. That doesn't seem like a thing that is normal for summer league guards, especially summer league guards with high usage. And so that part is impressive for me. But that's where I start. And then defense gets at the rim. I think very physical, very active. I think that's kind of where I start.
So I have a question. A couple questions, okay. Right? One, this is just an overall positive. If you're a Bucks fan, if they're Milwaukee Bucks, you got young talent that's going to be very good. Now, it's going to be interesting to see how the context works as the season goes on. But I will say, if you're the Bucks, Taylor Jenkins usually does well with scoring guards. Going to get you some movement. Mm-hmm. You can get downhill. We're good to go. And the turnover point is solid because it's not like the assists aren't there. This isn't just Bucky getting without a purpose. So I'm intrigued by that. Where my mind goes, and I kind of want to like tuck a question that I want to ask to you in a second about scoring guards in summer league. This is a good platform. If you are able to get buckets and you are aggressive and you are playing with freedom, you can kind of step out and be seen in a certain way. Mm-hmm. To the Bucks context, they're going to have guard play, Nekias. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
If you're talking about Tyler Hero, Ryan Rollins, you're talking about Braden Burry, you're talking about Jaime Jaquez, like they're going to have, even Usman Dieng got after it. Kyle Kuzma was aggressive. Like, I feel like they're going to have people that went after it. And so I'm intrigued to see how he fits in that context. But you got to feel good about having a player with that kind of skill, that kind of talent, and that kind of mindset. Like, you hear the quotes from him where it's like, yeah, I would like to be all rookie. I'd also like to be an all-star. I'd like to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, you got goals. I understand it. Like, mm-hmm. Salute. That's good. So I'm right there with you.
Yeah, that's good. The other thing that I would add just on the drive point, because of the way that he won some of these drives, and again, like not 100 miles per hour, I might go 80, but I'm taking you with me because I'm physical. It unlocks some of these like late passing reads for him that I'm intrigued by. Like, get to some like late lay down passes or some lob opportunities, some kickouts to the wing or to the opposite corner. It's like, okay, he's seeing this stuff. Didn't always end up in an actual assist, average 4 so far during summer league play. But it's like, okay, he is still kind of dictating terms to a degree and being able to find these things late versus predetermining something that you talk often about. Young guards have to learn, okay, it's fine if you have the right answer. You can't just go into it saying, this is my answer. The fact that he's able to find these kind of plays late and then also mix in the, this guy's already open, I can hit you early type, like that, the processing kind of stood out to me on that front as well. So,
okay.
Wanted to give a quick salute to Braden Burry.
Now, real quick, let's stay in the bucket getting category. Let's go to Cleveland. Let's talk about Malik Thomas. And so for me, summer league again is made for bucket getters. And if mm-hmm. you drop 30 points in the Thomas and Mack Center on Sunday, and you follow that up with 35 points in the Cox Pavilion on Monday, you put your stamp into some summer league lore. And so Malik Thomas, who clearly wants to know, I should not have been a second rounder, and his play mm-hmm. has backed it up. Where are you at with him having these kind of performances in Vegas?
Literally the first thing I have typed out in my notes, Steve, is what a darn bucket, with bucket in all caps. The array of baskets that he has scored over these handful of games is insane. He's leading Vegas Summer League in scoring a little bit over 28 points per game, 45.8% on 8 3-point attempts per game. And like similar to the earlier conversation, it's not like he's just taking spot ups. It is some spot ups off some swing opportunities, but it's also a whole lot of off the dribble stuff in transition, in pick and roll. I got a switch. Let me boogie. I could go to it. And just from an aesthetic standpoint, Steve, give me a jumper with a lean and or a flick, I'm likely going to be in. He has both. And so I like watching him take shots. Now, with anyone that can get buckets like that, there's always going to be the question of, okay, did you have to take that one? You can make this shot, but was there a passing read available for you? And so as he removes from the summer league context, like that's going to be something that that's going to help him have some staying power. But I'm not like super concerned, because even within that, over 4 assists a game, he did make basic reads on top of the scoring. So like, I'm not super concerned, but this is going to be something I'm keeping an eye on. But man, his ability to get to the off the dribble stuff. Actually, can I ask you a scoring process question on Malik Thomas?
What you got?
How do you feel about his floaters?
I don't mind it, because there's a rhythm and a cadence he has when he gets to him. Like, I'm not the floater king. I love a good mid-range shot, but if you feel like you have the footwork and you feel like you have the space to get that off, go ahead. Why not? So for me, I'm more seeing, are you navigating the space? Are you attacking? Are you engaging the big? Are you understanding how you can get to that shot more than you took a floater, right? So if you can create a shot, however you can get that ball in the basket, I respect it. I salute it. I just don't want you to automatically think I have to do this is where my mind goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of where I went. Because I think he obviously has the shooting touch to get to him. And I think for a guard that can score on multiple levels, it is important to have that counter in the bag. I was just looking at some of his interior shot attempts in general. I was like, he really likes this one. A whole lot of I'm driving to the left and I'm getting this righty floater off. And it's like, okay, I'm glad that you can make this. Once we scale up to, again, preseason play, then regular season play, let's make sure that is not the only counter that you have. I don't think that is the case, but that is just like a thought that I had. It's like, okay, he likes getting to this a lot. You don't want that to be kind of like a predetermined thing, especially if you're going like, I'm going left, I'm fading right. That is a shot against longer, more athletic defenders that can't get contested or blocked. So that was my general thought on it.
Yeah, it scores find a way to get their buckets. Let's turn the brain off for a second. Let's get you right into the Nekias lane. Let's talk about a player that I know you've been waiting to talk about because he checks all the boxes as far as what Nekias Duncan enjoys in a basketball player. Someone who fills the box score, gives effort on both ends of the floor. Where are you at with the Toronto Raptors' Allen Graves, Nekias?
Okay, so my initial answer is yes. I think that would be my first answer. In all seriousness, Steve, I think you nailed it with just types of players I like. Like, give me a two-way guy. It popped me immensely as I'm turning on like Toronto Boston tape. His first basket is just a slot cut. It's like, you know what? That's not flashy, but like you understand like where the help is coming from and pick and roll, you're filling space, get to the basket. That's an easy one. It's like, you know what? That's pretty darn cool. So like for me, spatial awareness pops for me. Offensive versatility, where we saw him as a screener, we saw him as a spacer and then a cutter off of that. We saw him as a pick and roll ball handler. And then if you got smaller guys on him, like very comfortable, like let me turn over the shoulder, get to a push shot or a hook shot. So like you just kind of feel the lanes. And then on top of that, Steve, as again, this is more so my introduction to Allen Graves, shooting incredibly well from three, nearly 44% on over 5 attempts per game. Like I don't know how real that is, because again, I am just getting familiar with him. So that is just like literal ignorance more than like doubt. But if you feel, if you know how to feel,
how real does it need to be though? Like, do you need the percentages to be real or do you need the confidence to be real?
Yes.
That doesn't help the discussion progress in any shape or fashion.
Okay. No, I think the confidence, I think, is going to be important because depending on who he's on the floor with, that's going to determine who he's being guarded by and how he's being guarded. And so naturally, if he is being like gapped when he doesn't have the ball, yeah, we need you to kind of take those shots and rhythm, big dog, because within the broader context of Toronto's offense, over the past few years, teams have been very comfortable saying, I care if y'all shoot. Let's just pinch. Let's switch against you. Let's pinch in the paint. Let's force you to knock down jumpers. And so if Allen Graves can actually knock down shots at a high clip, that is going to be very helpful for the context. It's also going to further unlock the types of lineups they can get into. Like, hey, if we get Kawhi plus Allen, well, if Kawhi is actually traded to the Toronto Raptors, I guess we are still waiting on that. If Redacted is traded back to the Toronto Raptors, then you could have Redacted plus Graves plus Scotty plus CMB on the floor and whoever else you want to add in as the fifth. Like, you can just get into some jumbo lineups that are a lot of fun. And, like, the shooting is going to be important to that. So, like, within that lens, like, yeah, you need the confidence more than, like, the percentages. But naturally, like, please make the shots so, like, teams have to respect you and that opens up things for everyone else.
Okay. Understood. Continue on. Yeah. Were you going to go to the defense? Okay. Were you going to go to the overall skill package? Where were you at?
Who we? We can also active on the offensive glass. To the defense, man, he flies around. Like, we talked about it a little bit with Caleb Wilson, but he is someone, you stash him on the weak side, he is very good at reading and just kind of zoning up and making plays from there. Very active rotator, very active hands, can play the passing lanes, can challenge shots at the rim on top of this. And so, like, he is just someone that knows how to play basketball, for lack of a better way to phrase it. And I am excited to see more of him within the Toronto context. Again, especially if the three-point shooting is going to be this. Because I think, again, screening, cutting, making connect the passes, like, he already does all of that stuff on top of that. So I have enjoyed D'Allen Gray's experience so far.
I have a quick question.
Okay.
And I tie it back to what we talked about earlier, right? We had the bucket getting of Malik Thomas, and we talked about the bucket getting of Braden Burries. Keaton Wagler, Darius Acuff, people have had questions about them. I have a twofold question. Is it bad to understand that players may have a weakness? And is it easier to be a bucket getter with lower expectations than that being the thing that brought you to the dance? Those are my two questions.
Okay. No, I don't think it is a bad thing to understand the weakness. I think something that you hit on last week is, okay, note the weakness, but see how they build on it. See what the counter is. See what the next attempt is. Don't just, that is a weakness, that is it. They are bad at this. This is why their NBA career is cool. Like, I don't think you should tap that button. You know what I mean? But I think it's fair to acknowledge, hey, this player struggles with this. This is something that they may have struggled with in college. And now this is still a growth area. Like, I think with Keaton Wagler, again, someone that I didn't see a lot of film on in college. And I tweeted out during the game, like, hey, Keaton's kind of struggling to separate. Like, that may be a little bit of an issue. And I checked my quote tweets on that tweet. And it's a whole lot of, wow, who saw that coming? This was the bit in college. I was like, well, thank you, one. But two, okay, so this is a long-term thing that I want to see how he navigates. And so it was interesting to go from that game to the next one to where he didn't see the same level of full-court pressure. And while he didn't shoot well, oh, he's getting two spots a little bit easier. He can now flow more freely into a pick and roll. You start to see some of the probing, keep a guy on the hip, make some playmaking reads from there. It's like, okay, if he's not within this context, this is where the skills that got him drafted this highly get to pop a little bit. You see the pacing, you see the feel, you see the playmaking. He was more aggressive as a scorer within the context as well. So it's like, okay, like, I felt better about this game than I did the Kings game. And when you transport him into, like, the more NBA context for him, if he's playing off of Darius Garland or someone like that, he's more in a role where he gets to attack more tilted defense. Like, okay, I can easily see what this can look like. You know what I mean? So that's where understand the weakness. It does give you a starting point in terms of, okay, what am I looking for in this game? Something that you've talked about on this pod, mailbag episodes, et cetera, is like, if you only look for the thing, you are only going to see the thing. So you do have to be cognizant of that piece. But I don't think it's inherently bad to recognize, hey, this has to get better.
Yeah, I wanted to ask that question. So great answer. Love that. Did you have any other additional summer league thoughts, Nikias, before we move on?
I would say Sergio DeLoria. I love the passing from him. A whole lot of lobs last night. I wanted to sprinkle that in. But love the pick and roll feel. Wasn't super burst, didn't win drives purely, at least not consistently, but was still able to kind of mosey his way into deep paint touches. And then from there, he just reads defenses so well, processes the floor so well. So you get into some of the late playmaking reads. Again, a whole lot of lobs. And I think he also just did a really good job, as Memphis was a team last year, the year before. We were a high pickup point team. We were a full court pressure team that has certainly ramped up in summer league again. I think he did a really good job of countering that. And once he got to the open floor, the playmaking got to pop even more for him. And so we didn't really talk about him as we were talking about, like, the Yaxel Morris Johnson matchup on the Friday episode. I think that game happened on Thursday. This was one where there was no Morris Johnson. It was like, oh, we just get to see more of these other guys. And he absolutely popped for me in this game against the Grizzlies. So I wanted to shout him out. And I guess while I'm on that game, complimentary, I do not need to see any more Cedric Howard. And I say that positively. He has graduated from summer league from what we've seen over the few games we got from him over the past few days. The defense, the drives, I think I'm good. I think we're good. I think Cedric Howard is good. I will sprinkle that in. on the summer league front? Are there any other players you want to shout out, Steve, before we move to some of the new stuff?
Oh, nope.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. All right, well, let's get into some of the news. We have LeBron updates, question mark, as we still wait on the official decision for him to be made.
We don't have any updates. We don't have any updates. Outside of live recordings of podcasts, we have no updates.
Well, hey, that might be a flashbulb moment for the decision. He's going to be a Fanatic for Thursday and Friday.
For whom's?
Hey, listen, he may decide on your Thursday or Friday, like, hey, actually, I'm going here. He's going to have a microphone. He's going to have an audience. He may just be like, you know what? This is the time. This is how and where I'm going to make my announcement. So we'll see. I'll just quickly add on that
didn't,
front.
Didn't Kevin Durant do that? Anyways, go ahead.
Well, we will see. We don't know as of now. But leading suitors per Shams, in whatever order you want to put them in, the Cavs, the Heat, the Warriors, the Sixers, and the Timberwolves. The latest from Chris Haynes said he's talked to LeBron James agent Rich Paul and said that LeBron has all the information needed. So now it's all up to LeBron to make a decision. So all of the voice notes have been received and listened to. I guess we don't need the whiteboard at this point, or maybe that's how they're deliberating on who he's ultimately going to sign with. Who knows? That's the latest that we have from Shams plus Chris Haynes. We are still waiting on the decision, Steve. On the LeBron front. And I will just say, I am not LeBron, so I don't know what specifically he wants and what blend of I want to win versus I want to be happy versus I want off.
He wants happiness. He wants happiness.
Happiness is very broad term. Happiness.
He said happiness.
He did.
That's all. Yeah, you got to laser in on what he said. He said it.
This is true. Do we think he'd be happiest with the homecoming to Cleveland? Is this going to be as Draymond got to chop it up with LeBron in person? Like, hey, big dog, you play with me. We cool. You play with Steph Curry. Y'all can golf together. All these things. Like, I do wonder, like, what he is prioritizing within his happiness. Because I think if it is, I want to be competitive, something that also has come out. Like, I want to be competitive. I want to be able to compete for a championship. I still want to play important basketball. From the basketball perspective, like, it's just kind of Minnesota for me. Like, that is the basketball context, I think, on both ends that makes the most, or when you think about both ends of the floor, that is the basketball context that makes the most sense to me. I think offensively, he does not have to do a ton of heavy lifting with Anthony Edwards plus LaMelo Ball. And Jaden McDaniels also growing as a creator, someone that can already attack closeouts. LeBron can just kind of be like half-court anchor when game slows down, but he doesn't have to do that amount of carrying within the first three quarters. Defensively, Jaden McDaniels, you defend the top guy. Rudy Gobert, you anchor the paint. Anthony Edwards, please give more consistent effort defensively, because when you do, you are incredible. But, like, I could guard number twos, and then LeBron could just kind of do the backline stuff. Like, that's a two-way context that makes sense to me. But I don't know. Yeah, go ahead.
Can I play devil's advocate real quick, Nikias?
Sure.
You want LeBron James to spend his last year with Rudy Gobert and LaMelo Ball in his first year with a new team?
I think it makes some basketball sense still. I think even with this something we talked about when the trade was made.
Who's pick and roll partner?
I mean, if you want to switch LeBron, Rudy, pick and rolls, like I still don't love like bigs having to try to defend LeBron, especially if he's flowing into other stuff with like Anthony Edwards, LaMelo with like handoffs and things like that. So that can still work. Also, Ant or LaMelo could just set screens for LeBron.
True.
So, just like, curious. There are some things.
Just wanted to ask, since apparently you're happy, your definition of happiness has led the Wolves to be number one, as you have apparently moved the Heat to number five for your personal purposes.
Well, that's fine.
Don't worry about it. Yeah, you did. They're not number one, so it's okay. The Sixers fit intrigued me. I thought you had an update, by the way. Where's the update? LeBron knows where he wants to go, and we're waiting. That's where we've been at the whole time. I think the Philly fit is interesting. I don't know if he does that, but that's a lot of firepower to play with. They'd have to figure out depth, but that's okay. Heat already know what that is. Cleveland already know what that is. Golden State already know what that is. So now we just got to wait and find out where is the joy going to come from for LeBron James? Mm-hmm. And where does he feel like he will have the most joy on the basketball court? Because I think there is a fit for every one of these places. I think everyone will pit them apart and say, oh, Cleveland doesn't have this. Miami doesn't have this. Golden State doesn't have this. You add LeBron James to a ready-made scenario. All these teams are very good to degrees. And now they add LeBron James to the mix. And so I think that's the intrigue for me. That's the fun. What does LeBron end up adding? Because for me, I think whatever team LeBron joins, that's top five team in the league. I'll just put it down.
Okay.
Pencil, not pen.
Pencil, not pen. I like that. As I was like thinking about LeBron stuff, I just kind of, I tried to rank the teams in like three different areas. Like I have a basketball power ranking. Ending power ranking.
Did you combine them? Did you aggregate these? Did you combine all these? Well, how are we going to know who the champion is?
I mean, I can still pick. You know what I mean? But I just wanted to rank these out. Just like, okay. So I was trying to figure out, like, happiness has been the thing. But, like, what exactly is the thing that's going to make him the most happy? Okay, so from the basketball perspective, I have the Wolves 1. I have the Heat 2. Okay. I have the Warriors 3. I have the Sixers 4. I have the Cavs 5. I do. Next. As far as the storybook ending, what is the story that makes the most sense for LeBron to kind of close out his career? I have the Cavs 1. I have the Heat 2. I have the Warriors 3. I have the Sixers 4. I have the Wolves 5.
Okay.
In terms of just general off court, I want to expand, et cetera, et cetera. I have Golden State 1. I have Miami 2. I have Cleveland 3. I have Philly 4. I have Minnesota 5. So I guess if we're doing like the aggregate thing, honestly, if we're doing the aggregate thing, it's probably gold. It's probably Golden State, then Miami. If we're looking at it.
Are we sure? How's that math? Because Miami was second in every category. So their number is 2.
There is 2. Yeah. So the Warriors won all four.
Your formula was Miami. I see what you did buddy.
Okay. So that would be Miami, because that's just 6. If we're just adding up, that'd be 6. Golden State would be 7. So that'd be 2nd. And then from there, I think that's Cleveland, then Minnesota, then Philly. I think it's how they rank out from doing quick mental math.
So we have the official Nakai. We have the official Nakai Duncan, LeBron James happiness rankings, and that has somehow led him to the Miami Heat.
That is very funny. I just do not have them number 1 in anything, and they still end up at the top of the. That's okay. Well, there you go. So we'll see what decision LeBron makes, I suppose. As far as other news that has popped out, Steve. So Victor Wembanyama has signed an extension, 5-year max, 25% max instead of 30% max, which has garnered some conversation about Wemby taking a pay cut. Do you have any care about Wemby taking the pay cut? This does not. Okay.
Salute to Wemby. Good for the Spurs. Sure. I'm sure everyone had a good time in Paris. I don't. Next.
Okay, fair enough. On the signing front, Gary Trent Jr. is going to be back with the Milwaukee Bucks on a 4-year, $64 million contract, which has also garnered a lot of conversation based on the season that he put together last year. Did you have any thoughts, any surprise that this was the Gary Trent Jr. contract?
Why do you say, it's conversation, you ask me if I have, the Milwaukee Bucks decided to pay Gary Trent Jr. a lot of money for a lot of years. Why do we need an investigation for that? What was he making before he took Bettman deals and he got 4 years out of it? We have lived through multiple GMs paying players a lot of money. Archetypes have made a lot of money. Can you shoot? Jody Meeks made a lot of money. Like, I don't understand the outrage here. So whatever this conversation is, would you like to display it instead of asking me? Because I don't care. Salute to Gary Trent.
It's an interesting dollar figure based on what last year was. And I think coming off of the minimums, I think that's where it's like, was this kind of baked in? That we are going to take care of you later. Like, I think that is like the heart of the conversation. Because based on last year, like, I don't think 464 was going to be his market rate. Hence this deal just now being announced versus him being like one of the first signings in free agency. And so that's kind of it. But that's also just kind of where it ends for me. Like, huh, that is interesting. I wonder if anything comes for this. I am not going to bemoan anyone getting their money, especially within this construct. So that was just kind of it. But there has been a lot of noise about it from people that are way more more upset about this than I am, and definitely more upset than you are. And so I figured I would get your thoughts on that front. Other thing on the signing front.
Joe Smith got like an 8-year deal and it didn't count. Man. I'm not buying this.
Oh, well, it didn't count because you just cannot do what they did.
That's the joke. Let it sit.
My fault. Zaire Williams to the Los Angeles Lakers, 1-year deal at the minimum. Do you like the fit in Los Angeles for Zaire Williams?
Yes. I think he is someone who can defend. He can space floor. He can occasionally and is willing to take threes. He can drive. That always seems to be a personality that works next to Luka Doncic. So why not take the flyer? Do they need Zaire Williams to pop? No, they don't. If he pops, does he help them? Yes, he does. Win-win for everyone.
There you go.
Where are you at with Zaire Williams? Because I feel like you've gone up and down with Zaire Williams over the course of his career.
I really have, man. Like,
I know.
Memphis, there was like the Memphis had like the shot creation flashes and then it disappeared. And it's like, okay, well, now here's the defense. It's like, all right, well, that isn't enough for him to keep him there. You go to Brooklyn, it's like, ooh, look at the defense. And then last year, it's like, ooh, what's happening to the defense? The shot kind of fluctuated in Brooklyn. And I'm just like, ha, I would like for him to figure this out on both ends. I would like for you to be consistently good defender. As we saw in Brooklyn, can be part of like the full court pressure package. So if the Lakers want to ramp that up with any of their second units, like if him and Colin Sexton are on the floor together, is that a time where the Lakers are like, yeah, let's pressure a little bit, mix it in. We're not going to be a full court pressure team, but within this specific lineup combination or when those two are on the floor together, we can sprinkle more of this in. Like that is something I can map out. And I think you hit the nail on the head with the broader context. If he does pop on this kind of deal, like it just makes sense. And this is a context in which he can pop. But he does just need to put it together on both ends and showcase a level of consistency that throughout his early portion of the career, he hasn't been able to yet. Obviously, some injury stuff sprinkled in as well. But I would like for him to nail this because this does seem like a fun fit. Like him flying around transition off of Luka passes, like that should be fun. And then defensively, he should take on tough assignments. So I like it. And at the minimum, like that's a pretty good flyer to me.
Understood. I like it. I like it as well. I just was scrolling July 10th. Duncan says he will not take less than the maximum salary. Speaking of maximum, we've reached the max amount of time in this part of the Dunker Spot. Join us after this break, and we'll have more Dunker Spot talk ready for you.
And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot as we shift to the WNBA side of the program. And we start with some news, Steve, that came in hot over the weekend. The Los Angeles Sparks and general manager Regan Peabody agreeing to part ways. Peabody was originally hired in 2024. And since then, some landmark transactions have kind of shaped where the Sparks are right now. Traded a 2026 first. That pick eventually became Awafong. For a 24 first and Kia Nurse. In 2024, they draft Rakia Jackson. Rakia Jackson for Ariel Atkins. Before we get there, we get to 2025. They trade for Kelsey Plum. They send away the number 2 overall pick of that draft in that deal. That pick became Dominique Malanga. And so if you are watching the Seattle Storm front court featuring all-star Dominique Malanga and Awafong, who looks excellent, you have that. And then, as mentioned a little bit earlier, you get to 2026 in that offseason. You trade Rakia Jackson for Ariel Atkins. Trade has not worked out to the degree that they thought it would. And as of recording, the Sparks 10-12 right now, 9th in offense, 14th in defense, so no longer the worst defensive rating, but 14th in defense nonetheless, 12th in net rating. And so, Steve, just on a general note, what was your initial reaction to the news? Where do you start with the Sparks making some pretty big changes up top?
That ball is coming right back to you, buddy. Because okay. We have done multiple Sparks segments, and I have tried to explain what the Sparks have attempted to do. The public has said, why would you be in win now mode? Can't believe you would do this. You haven't gotten any better. You've underachieved, and we're here at this midseason move. So I'm more intrigued to hear what you have to say about the Sparks move, because I can kind of get to the swings. The problem is the accumulation of the swings with injuries, without a level of success, we see teams maybe try and pivot too early. We see teams maybe try and build a core. We see teams try and win now. We have a blend of that with coaching changes, with injuries, with actually adding talent, but the cost of adding that talent hurting you in the back end. So how have you absorbed this Sparks run? As I don't know if you were a believer in many of the Sparks moves.
I was kind of in the camp, because we've had these conversations both on the podcast and offline, to where I understand why the Sparks want to speed things up. And I think I circle back to, I guess, a couple of years ago at this point, where you get that article from, I want to say the LA Times, but either way, conversation with Magic Johnson, where he's like, we got to get the Sparks back to being one of the premier franchises in the league. I haven't invested enough time. That's going to change. I'm going to do more. And since then, we've got some changes up top, got announcements of a practice facility on the high end. So like, that should be coming. That is a positive. But the Sparks, I don't think it's a coincidence that they got more aggressive with their swings from that interview onward. And this is where you get, instead of slow playing the rebuild and adding whoever they want to take at number two, they ended up being Dominique Malanga. Can't guarantee that would have been the pick for them if they killed. But okay, instead of that, let's get Kelsey Plum, who is not far removed from winning a championship, all W caliber player. You got to be the face of this new direction that we're going in. And so for me, it's like, if you have ownership pressure and you want to win now, I understand adding what at the time was like a top 10 player. And as we've seen this year, when Kelsey Plum has been available, she has been what, one of the five or six best players in the league conservatively? And so like, I understand why you do that. For me, and as we talked about when these moves were made, it was like, I don't know if you need to like accelerate. I understand why you would. And if you're going to do so, these are some moves that make sense for you. But overall, I would have rather you kind of slow play this, get some assets in the room, get some younger prospects in the room, and kind of build it that way. Because I'm less about them. I'm also just kind of looking at the rest of the league where like, okay, the Aces have the star build. The Liberty has the star build. The Mercury are doing their star build. I don't know if this is the time for you to kind of make this kind of swing while you already have these other powers here. And that's before even getting into like what Minnesota has been during this run as well. And so I understood why they did it. But as you kind of alluded to, I wasn't a big... Oh, go ahead.
I got pushback on that because we've been in a race for talent between these WNBA teams for at least 2-3 years. I've said it on this pod multiple times. So the idea that you're supposed to do a traditional rebuild, what is that in the WNBA? The closest we have to it right now is the Sun and the Mystics, right? The Sun are where they are. The Storm are on the rise, but where they are, and the Young and the Restless are surviving. So I'm not necessarily sure that we're going to just copy and paste and say, well, if the Sparks had done X, Y, and Z, they'd be better off. They'd be losing games. The team built, I don't want to say a tomb timeline approach, but they were able to have enough to where we get a Kelsey Plum who wants to be here. We have a draft where did we win the lottery and get Caitlin Clark? No. We got Cam Brink and Rekia Jackson. That's fantastic. 2024, you know what I mean? That wasn't our year. We were up there, though, right? Hey, guess what? The next year, we had the best odds. You know who we didn't get? We didn't get Paige. So we didn't get the talent that would necessitate or alleviate some of the things you're looking for as far as having the young talent to make this go. So we got Cam Brink. We got Rekia Jackson. Cam Brink gets hurt. Derek Ham is playing well. Rekia Jackson is playing well, but now our team has shifted a little bit. Do we need Rekia Jackson? We trade Rekia Jackson because, hey, this is duplicitous, right? So while we can look at it and say, oh, it would have been the Dom Malanga pink. You could have had Sonya Citron. You could have. Would you have gotten that same player based on who you had in the building? Because you got Kelsey Plum, right? So that's where I'm like, I understand slamming the Northern Sparks if you want to. They took swings. The swings didn't pay off. But when you sit there and you're like, hey, you guys have severely underachieved, how much have they underachieved?
Oh, was that the...
That's a question.
I wanted to make sure I didn't cut you off. Okay. No, I think...
That's a question.
No, understood. I think to the underachieving question, like some of that you just have to put the injury context in. Like, if you are going to make the swing, you want to have your people. And if you do not have your people, and we see this year, again, Kelsey Plum's played 12 games. You don't have Cam Brink. Like, that does just hurt your infrastructure on both ends of the floor. Independent, before we get into anything else, like, that you were just missing two pillars for you for what you were trying to build. And so like that injury context matters and it is important. To answer the question more broadly, if we are making swings because we want to win, and last year you have the second half run that you did, but you ultimately don't make the playoffs. This year, mm-hmm. with the injury context, which I think is still fair to add, you are under 500. You've been flirting with the worst defense in the league and with one of the worst defenses in league history for most of the season. And still technically not out of it because we have half a season to go. But within that lens, if I aim to win and we have not hit 500 yet, much less made the playoffs, much less won a playoff series, much less actually gotten to contendership, like, yes, you are underachieving in a literal sense. I think for me, it just kind of shifts from you have underachieved, how much of this is actually your fault is kind of where I would change it. And like for this year, well, the injuries are where I'm like, I'm not super mad at the Sparks. But I do go back to the conversations we had initially. I can't speak for everyone, of course, where I was like, I get it. I don't know if I would do it.
Well, this is where the moves hurt you. What is your base? You've taken injury hits, but you've also made trades to change your base how many times in the last 2-3 years? Mm-hmm. What's your core, right? It's a good, like, you got Nekka to come back, but you don't have Cam Brink injury again. You no longer have Rekia Jackson. So I understand the, okay, pivoting is great, but did you establish what the good was that you wanted to build around it? Or was it pivot after pivot after pivot? And did that do you in?
Yeah.
Because while you can point to, okay, we had injuries, we had success, we had the right track, what is the right track? This year mm-hmm. was probably to show the right track. And so while Eric Wheeler has been playing high-level basketball to keep the Sparks in, I think they're only 2 games out of the 8 seed right now as we speak. Have you now put yourself in a worse position overall mm-hmm. to win now, right? Because, like, how do you pivot out of this one? You take the swing, which I admire taking the swing, but now where's your next pivot? Because now you've played well enough to not be in a position to capitalize on future draft capital, right?
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's where it gets more difficult. I think just looking at the roster, that's where my brain just kind of goes to, I mean, Cam is hurt. And, like, I don't think you want to trade, like, the last young, interesting chip that you have, unless you want to include like Ray Burrell in the mix, but like based on the contract, I don't know what the trade value is going to be on that front. And so like, you don't really want to move either of those two, especially if you are going to decide to pivot again. Like, we will see what happens with like the full-time general manager spot. We'll also see naturally, if you have a new GM, naturally it's like, okay, are we keeping the head coach on top of this? Like, we just have to monitor that. That's just how it works in the league. And so, like, you don't want to trade the young pieces. You didn't go to the veterans. It's like, as you mentioned, Erica Willers had a pretty solid season. Mm-hmm. Do you try to get something for Erica Willers or get a younger player in the building for Erica Willers? Sell high for a playoff team that may want to add some point guard play? Do you press the big red button and say,
Who is said playoff team
that could use more point guard? I guess, like, Atlanta off the top of my head. Do you want to boost the reserve bit? If they see for Tahina Pau-Pau as more
who, of – Nah, no way. No way they I'm do saying, that deal.
Oh, I'm not saying they're trading Tahina. I'm saying if Atlanta views Tahina as more of a two that can also initiate versus an actual point guard, then like adding Erica Willard to the room as a reserve point, you can play those two together. That's what I was getting at. That wasn't saying trade it. I would imagine the Sparks would probably be okay if we could get a rookie, if we could get a young Tahina Pau-Pau in the room for Erica Willard. I'm sure they would do that. But the point I was making is that if Atlanta wants to add some point guard depth, and that would allow Tahina to play more two for you, like, maybe that is a spot for Wheeler if they decide to press that button.
Okay.
So that was my point there. The other thing is, Kelsey Plum is on a 1-year deal. Do you explore what a trade package would look like there if you were the Sparks, if you are looking to pivot? That would be the big red button. If you were asking me, I don't think they will. But if you're just looking at vets, it would make sense to at least hear what other teams are saying. The answer is still ultimately no.
What team would go to get Kelsey Plum right now and they could just wait?
Because like initially, I think quick shout out to Hunter Cruz, who did like a trade piece not too long ago, mentioned the Golden State Valkyries as a Kelsey Plum team. And I was like, you know what? Would be a fascinating fit. You just need like a pure, we need an actual number one scoring option. I was like, you know what? That would make some sense.
I like the idea of Kelsey Plum. I like the idea of Kelsey Plum and the Golden State Valkyries. If I'm the Golden State Valkyries, we are the 3 seed, 1 game out of the 1 seed. Mm-hmm. We can deal with that later.
You can.
Right?
That is, they're in position to do so. I guess for me, the conversation that we've been having with the Golden State Valkyries all year, as they have won, they haven't lost in like 3 weeks. So we should start there with the Golden State Valkyries. They're playing incredibly well right now, off the backs mm-hmm. of what continues to be an incredibly elite defense. I think if you are projecting playoff things with them, it is still, what does this half-court offense look like against high-level defenses? And we have seen in some regular season matchups against other playoff teams where it's like, ooh, the half-court offense can get a little hazy at times. If they feel like we have a strong foundation right now, Kelsey Plum can take us over the top. I don't think that's hard to argue for Golden State. I do get your general point. Like, we are good right now, so let's do it.
So what's the trade? What are you breaking up on a team that's playing this well to get Kelsey Plum, who hasn't played in how long?
Ooh, we're closing in on, 2-3 weeks now? KP being out? Correct. And so we'll see if she mm-hmm. is back at the All-Star break or slightly after the All-Star break. They have salaries they can cobble together. I think they have all of their picks, so it would be some kind of branching from there. We could do some trade machinery real quick, though. I think the Hunter Cruz deal, I think that was like Chen Salon and 2 firsts, if I remember correctly.
I don't know. Now, why would I do that if I'm Golden State? And why would I do that if I'm the Sparks?
I feel like there'd be a quicker no for the Spark Valkyries. And I say that as someone you know. I'm a huge fan of. I know you did. I'm saying, like, I think you could talk yourself more into that from the Golden State perspective. As much as I love Jadel Salon, like, if I can get Kelsey Plum in the building and she just adds a scoring punch that we desperately need, particularly from the guard room, like, you do have to give up something of value. Like, I think I'd be okay with that, especially if it comes baked in with, we are going to keep her here for the long term. I think that is the kind of defensive infrastructure you want around Kelsey Plum. I think that makes life a little bit easier for Veronica Burton. It certainly makes life easier for Gabby Williams. You do still just have forward depth in general. And so, like, I think that is a construct that I think is worth a conversation, at the very least. I would frame it that way.
Got it. What else? What other spots did you think, Nikias?
Because, like, that's kind of the one. Like, Atlanta is kind of intriguing, but I don't ultimately think they would want to break up any of their backcourt pieces. But Atlanta just kind of feels like the guard spot for me right now. But, like, those would probably be the two.
Okay.
I think if you are below them in the standings, like, okay, why are we making, like, a similar swing right now? Like, if you're the Lynx, like, I don't need to do that when we have Olivia Miles plus Courtney Williams plus Kayla McBride. I think we're okay. The Aces would be a funny one, but, like, what could you even trade to get that done? And so I think I start with Golden State. I see what Atlanta is willing to part with at the very least. And if not, then, as you mentioned earlier, KP wanted to be there, which is part of the reason why the Sparks were comfortable trading for her. And so, end of the day, like, you could just be fine with that. Broader question for me was, like, if they decide to go full-blown pivot again, that probably is the veteran piece that makes the most sense that would get them more things. Because, like, I don't think the NECA trade value would be the same. I don't know if the De'Erica Hamby trade value would be the same. Like, I think Kelsey Plum would kind of be the one of that particular core. And, like, I don't think you're replenishing. Like, I don't know. Well, I guess Ariel Atkins has just been traded twice for, like, the pick that became Sonya Citron and then traded for Rekia Jackson. So I guess you cannot rule out that Ariel Atkins will once again get you something good and young. But I don't know, like, what position of strength the Sparks could do that from. And so that's why I wanted to get your thoughts on the Kelsey Plum piece, if they decide to press that button. So there we go. But we can transition from the Los Angeles Sparks, as they have a lot to sort through over the next few months. Steve, as I am recently returning from Las Vegas, was in the house for their back-to-back game over the weekend. blowout win over the Phoenix Mercury, in which Justine Pissot makes her makes her Aces debut in the fourth quarter and proceeds to score 19 points in 10 minutes. And I was like, what on earth is this? And then they play the Indiana Fever the next day, which is a tough match, stylistic matchup for them anyway. When you then factor in, it is a back-to-back. The Fever are coming off of, I think, 2 days of rest. It becomes an even tougher matchup, and the Indiana Fever blow the Aces out. So it's very funny for me to watch that Mercury game, and I'm tweeting out like, hey, they may just quote-unquote fix their net rating based on what this blowout is. And the number's going to look a certain way after this game. And then the Indiana Fever almost single-handedly erased all of that progress with their win over the Aces. It was a fascinating one for me. And I think, like, my broader thoughts about that two-game set, like, one, it was another example of when our defense hits a certain level, we can play out of our defense. This is what it looks like. This has been a mantra for the Aces for multiple years at this point. But I did end up thinking a little bit more about the Fever matchup in particular, because you go back to what some of the regular season matchups look like, what the second round playoff matchup was for them. And this is, you know, the playoff matchup, of course, was without Caitlin Clark, and they still got pushed to the brink, went to overtime. And if Kelsey Mitchell doesn't go down in that game, who knows how that game ends up going. And then you look at the regular season matchup so far, where Asia Wilson missed the first. This was a healthier matchup for the Aces. Dana Evans made her return. But the Fever do just put a level of pressure on them on both ends of the floor that not many teams do. Like, I think the Fever and a healthier version of the New York Liberty are probably the two teams that really bother Vegas the most. They kind of poke at what they do in particular. And the Fever matchup was a fascinating one for me, largely because of the Aaliyah Boston piece of it. It is no surprise for anyone that has watched the Indiana Fever that Aaliyah Boston is incredibly good at basketball. But I feel like it's kind of been understated, like, her presence in this particular matchup, how much that changes for the Aces. Because with Asia Wilson in particular, who is still, I would say, the MVP front runner, best player in the league, one of, if not the best player of all time, et cetera, I don't know if there are many defenders that give Asia issues quite like Aaliyah does, because she does have the rare blend of the size needed to deal with Asia, the length needed to contest Asia, and the mobility to be able to slide with Asia with the way that the Aces want to move her around the board. And so, like, the shot efficiency in this most recent game, like, there's a grain of salt for me just because, again, it's a back-to-back and there's a lot of jumpers. But conceptually, watching Aaliyah Boston defend Asia and the Fever trusting her to defend Asia one-on-one, like, it wasn't a situation where we want to send a bunch of late help, we want to send early doubles, et cetera. It was a lot of, Aaliyah, you are just on an island, do your job. And Aaliyah Boston, once again, did a tremendous job. It just kind of highlights, like, hey, obviously Asia's very good. She's their best player. If Asia's not getting two on the ball, it does kind of put them into this mix offensively that they don't really want to be in, to where it is a ton of one-on-one creation. And this is something that Becky Hammond spoke about, talked about how stagnant the offense was and that it wasn't us, but also mentioned the injury piece because of the back-to-back. Asked Asia Wilson about her shot diet in particular, because it felt like a ton of jumpers for her, not a lot of drives for her. And she highlighted, like, okay, the Fever did kind of make us play one-on-one more than we were supposed to, but ultimately it's on us to kind of get that movement going, et cetera. And I'm just like, huh, this Fever group has been talked about quite a bit, as we know, Steve. But they do just have a ceiling offensively that most teams can't deal with the pace and the playmaking of Caitlin Clark, the continuous bucket getting of Kelsey Mitchell, which, what a run Kelsey Mitchell has been on. And then Aaliyah Boston and her two-way impact and the way she could be moved around the board. All the experimentation we've seen from the Fever, the injury and lineup things they've had to navigate, you didn't watch them on a game like this, which, again, back-to-back tags, but you watch them on a game like this, is like, ooh, they can just hit a level that should scare other teams. And so I'm just kind of fascinated by that particular matchup, what it means for the Aces, and in general, the Fever just giving a nice reminder of the blend that they can hit on both ends. And so I was just kind of fascinated from that standpoint. I guess the question I will toss to you within the Aces Fever context in particular is, with Asia, is there a way for the Aces to make her more of a pressure point in this matchup versus the Fever kind of turning this more into a one-on-one affair like we saw over the weekend?
You don't have to apologize. People make choices all the time. I think the biggest thing is just you have to be aggressive and decisive and take that matchup on. Aaliyah Boston wanted that one. last time they played. So now you got to flip it. And so I think for the Aces, it's all about Asia being able to punish matchups, attack in different ways, draw pressure, Jackie Young being able to make enough shots, but also being able to handle the extra attention that defense throw at her. And then that opens a lot of things up for the Aces, and then you have to hold up defensively. I thought the Fever were able to find a rhythm in transition. They were able to flow. And again, when they have Kelsey Mitchell playing this well, when Caitlin Clark was able to kind of just put you in different positions and pick and roll, that's where I felt like they kind of found an extra rhythm where all three of them were going in different ways. So it's a tough part about this W season. I think there's a lot of teams that have elevated, and there's a lot of teams that have issues defeating certain teams. And so the Aces currently right now, if the season ended today, they face Liberty in the first round. I don't know how many people would feel about that. So the Aces are the Aces, but they have to figure out how to navigate the Fever and the Liberty. The Liberty have not, they've lost three in a row. They've lost seven of the last 10 games. They got to figure out how to be themselves, but also they got to figure out how to beat the Wings. But they can beat the Aces, and they can compete against the Lynx. The Valkyries got to figure out how they can beat the top-tier teams, but we can beat the Dream. The Wings, we can compete. We can beat the Liberty, but the top-tier teams, I'm not sure, but maybe Minnesota. That's the back and forth in the battle. And so I think that's where it gets to be the fun part of the season. And if you wind it out, you're having to just find out who you are and figure out how to do that in specific matchups, because a lot of these teams have different identities. They have different strengths. They have different weaknesses. You're not going to get the same variety of matchup. Certain teams that you may think, hey, are just out of it, come and get you the next day. And so the Fever rise. We've seen the Fever rise up. We've seen the Dream rise up. We've seen the Liberty rise up. We've seen different teams at different moments take the brass ring. The Lynx haven't moved, but the consistency that you have and being able to navigate from night in, night out, how do we establish ourselves on both ends of the floor, but how do we navigate the challenge that these teams throw? Something I've said from the start of the season, I'll continue to mention it, especially these playoffs are going to be tough to deal with. There's going to be very few easy series unless you get the number one seed, and that's not disrespect to Washington and or LA and or Portland and or Toronto. You are going to be in a cage match in the first round. So you're going to have to be able to navigate these matchups throughout this regular season, but have a strong base understanding of who you are.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think I have a Liberty question for you. But first, you mentioned just how much of a fight this is in the standings right now. As of recording, Steve, the current playoff matchups would be Lynx Mystics, which, hoo boy, that'd be a fight in the paint at bare minimum. You mentioned Aces Liberty, Valkyrie's Dream, which surely the Atlanta Dream, like, hey, man, not them again. It's either, hey, man, not them again, or we have so much fuel because of how these regular season matchups have gone, we are never letting this happen again. So that would be fascinating. And your current 4-5 right now would be Wings Fever, which,
hey, that is a... Freeze the standings.
That is so much
right now.
So much guard play.
No, yeah, right now, right now. Those three series, come on. Freeze the standings. Tell me you're not tuned in. You're not locked in.
Listen, that would be fantastic theater. These would be some interesting stylistic clashes. Like, hey, man, the Mystics 6-4 in their last 10. They continue to be pesky. Like, they have played the Lynx tight this year. For that matter, they have beaten the Lynx. Lynx got them right back a few days later. But, like, hey, that could get fascinating with what those Washington Bigs can do. That would be fascinating. Now, I do want to do a temperature check with you, Steve, with the New York Liberty, team that we've talked about quite a bit on this podcast. I think we have seen the highs of this group. We have seen the lows of this group. They're currently in a rut right now. We have gotten a shoe toss to add to the flavor of this season, which I still don't know how to navigate that one. But I guess just on a general note, Steve, what would be your concern level with the Liberty as of right now?
I don't have a concern level because I've already said this before. So what's your concern level with this fascinating team? I don't understand. Like, these, I've stated exactly what the New York Liberty are time and time again. You have alternated between this is the greatest team in the history of the world to, oh, I'm not sure what they are. So why don't you let the world know what you think about the Liberty at this current moment? Now, they've lost seven of the last 10 games, and we can talk about the fact that maybe they haven't been able to find the lineup size the same way they did last year. Maybe I said that before on this podcast. Maybe I did. Who knows? So what would you like to say?
I think for me, I have generally been in wait and see mode with the Liberty just because of the health issues that they've had to suss through so far this year. And I think paired with that is like first time head coach trying to navigate lineups within this weird injury context. And so, as we have seen on the high end, there's just a level of collective skilled size that the Liberty have that can put a bunch of pressure on teams. Defensively, we can close out gaps for you. We can force turnovers. We can clean the glass. We can get into this hybrid zone and just blow teams up. And on the high end, it's like, what do you do with the New York Liberty? Unfortunately, they just have not been able to carry that version quarter to quarter. You hit this 7 of 10 stretch, as you mentioned. And not only do you have like the 7 losses in 10 games, it feels like these losses have come in different ways. We have seen the defense not rise to the occasion. We've seen the offense dry up. We've seen the offense process be inconsistent in some games. It's just like, it would be nice for me to kind of pinpoint beyond they don't have everyone, they're trying to get chemistry together. What exactly is the thing that's going to consistently flip it? And so like general concern level, I'm probably like a 4, maybe a 5 right now, as they have now slid to 7th. But as you already alluded to, the standings are incredibly tight. Like if the Liberty win 2 or 3 in a row, they could be right back up to like 4th or 3rd. And so like not super dire. I am worried about the Leonie Fevish injury because she is incredibly important to their defensive infrastructure in particular. Like, as I mentioned, the zone, like she has been at the top of that. And in general, she just takes on tough defensive matchups. And I think that relieves pressure from what Jonquel Jones can do around the paint. Breanna Stewart doing a little bit of everything. And so like that is something that looms large. And while like the shoe stuff for Benaja was a funny subplot over the weekend, just in general, it's been interesting tracking what the minutes are, what the role is for her and some of the noise surrounding that. Because as you talked about before, Steve, like she is pretty important to connecting their lineups, especially when she is hitting the right notes on both ends of the floor. So like I'm probably at like a 5, not pressing the big red button, but I would like to, for them to string some level of consistency together or another stretch of consistency together so I can feel a little bit better.
It's not even about consistency. Stop searching. You don't know what your best lineups are. You don't know how to unlock the best people you have. You put yourself in a box being in, what, the 7 seed at this point? Different problems if you're the 3 seed. You've lost enough games to fall down the standings, and now you'll be forced to face a tremendous team in the first round. This is the same scenario you were in last year, as I said before. What guards have it going right now? Sabrina has turned the corner. Who is joining her? Do we know what we're getting from Maureen and Pauline every single night? We did at some point. Do we do them now? Stewie and Jonquel, we know they're established. Who's playing next to them? Who's playing behind them? Rebecca Allen Benaja, do you know Rebecca? Do you know how to play any of these people together at the same time? Mm-hmm. You got to get the most out of them. All these people have contributed. Hanzu, everyone has contributed to Liberty's success at the same time. How much do they lean on talent? This has been the exact same story. When they hit the notes, they hit the notes. When they don't, they don't. And they're searching the same way they were last year. So to do the song and dance once again with this team, despite it being painfully obvious, they have a high ceiling, but that floor is getting lower and lower. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got to figure it out. That game against Dallas is a must win, in my opinion. Dallas Wings have looked at you every single time and said, hey, open the cash register. Give me what you got.
That's open the cash register.
And bacon, egg, and cheese while you're at it. Have they not? Wait a
They have. I just was not expecting a cash register and a bacon, egg, and cheese reference at the same run. Oh, dear.
You lost seven of your last 10 games. You got the Wings that have done this to you all year long. You got to win this game. It's a must win for you. Can't take another one. So that's where I'm at with the Liberty. I can't wait to revisit this in 2 weeks when they win 5 games in a row and now they're magically great again. Or are we going to do the what's wrong with the Liberty bit again? We do it every year. I'm not sick of it or anything like that at all. At all.
You know, that sounds like we need a brief hold on Liberty discussion on this podcast. Oh, dear.
No, it's going to be the same thing. Because guess what? Guess what, Nikias? Let me look at their schedule right now. I call it right now. It's clear as day, right? They play Dallas. They're at Dallas, at Indiana. They play the Sky. They play the Sparks. They play the Aces. That's the next 5 games. Let's say they win 4 of those 5 and they play good defense. Mm-hmm. You're going to be the first one to talk about their defense. And I'm going to be the first one mad.
Well, I don't want you to be bad. I do want to, if they play good defense, I want to acknowledge, hey, the defense looks better. You know what I mean? We want to, we want to monitor the ebbs and flows of a season. It was like, hey, this is what's going on. And then they were just the best defense in basketball. It's like, hey, these are the notes they can hit. It slipped, and here we are. You know, it's just monitoring the ups and downs of the season. That's why I want the temperature check with you. Like, to your overarching point, the broader strokes of the Liberty story has not changed. That is fair.
Sure has.
And so, like, I do not disagree with you at all on that front. I think for me, it's more so like we are getting like these pockets of games. And so it's just like more of, I guess, more of a momentum deal, if that's a way to frame it. Just like, okay, how much of this is the Liberty aren't hitting the notes versus this is actually a problem for them is kind of where I want to get to with them.
Here's the thing. We talk about them being like winning three of their last seven, right? Mm-hmm. And I think like three of the seven includes the Sky. But if you look at it just thematically, their last three wins are two against the Aces and one against the Lynx. With a backdrop of, boy, we sure haven't been able to win a lot of games outside of that. So, I don't know what to do with that. But I know they need to put themselves in a stronger position to not be in the same spot they were in playoff-wise last year. I think that's the most important thing. Establish what you do every night defensively. Establish what you know you can do offensively. Make yourselves a strength as opposed to, okay, we're in a 76-67 game with Golden State. We're in a 93-91 game with the Tempo. Are you in those games because of your versatility or the styles that the other teams are playing put you in different scenarios? That's the question I'd ask.
I like that. That's a good
one. We'll be back with the Liberty when they beat the Aces again and the Kais is mad. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
That's tough. That is tough. Can I ask you a free throw to close things out?
What?
Who's the best guard in the W right now?
Who's the best guard in the W right now? Yeah. Paige Bueckers, Olivia Miles. Olivia Miles, Paige Bueckers. Paige Bueckers, Olivia Miles. Olivia Miles, Paige Bueckers.
I love the answer being
Olivia Miles, Paige Bueckers.
And see, this is why I wanted to ask, because Olivia Miles just slammed the door last night. It has been excellent pretty much all year long when she's been available. Paige Bueckers has been incredible this year, and we just talked about her on Friday. This recent run has been nutts for her. Caitlin Clark on the minutes restriction right now, but we have seen what the high end for her has been. Kelsey Mitchell has been on an absolute heater. Marina May continues to drop 30, and it just does not matter who she's playing, how she's guarded, what projectiles are flying, whatever the case may be. And it's just like, hey, man, there's a lot of high-level guard play happening this year, and especially like over the last 2-3 weeks. And so it's more so like a check-in, not a firm stamp, this is just the answer type beat. But it's just like, who have you enjoyed the most over this recent run? So I wanted to get your thoughts on that. This has been kind of nuts. I probably lean Paige right now, just as of July 14th. That'd probably be my answer to my own question. But if someone said Marina, like, I can't be mad with what she's put together as of late. Someone said Kelsey Mitchell, can't be mad based on what she's put together as of late. Someone said Olivia Miles, can't be mad based on what she's put together. This is where it also stinks again that Kelsey Plum is hurt because she was just playing at an incredibly high level before she went down. Fun guard year in the W right now. And then there's also Jackie Young, if you want to have her in the guard/wing group. Again, from June on, where she's just been insane. So I just wanted to toss the free throw your way, Steve, to close things out. And with that, thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports Man YouTube channel. That is where our WNBA content will live. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel for all of our NBA content. You can follow me on socials at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.